Meals to Money. I'm your host, Shireen Lakhani, and we've got a special bonus episode for you all today. Given the uproar of pipeline announcements that came in this week, we've been having several kind of internal debates and conversations about what the Liberty and Red Oak pipeline FIDs mean for the wider crude markets. And to explain all those moving pieces, I have Matt Lewis in studio with me. Good to have you here, Matt. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. Ready to talk about Liberty and Red Oak. I understand there are a lot of different pieces of this puzzle, so let's add some clarity. Lots to talk about. So just some context, P66 announced that it reached FID on two new pipelines, the Liberty Pipeline, which will connect into Butte and Belle Fourche in the Bakken to take barrels from the Bakken to Guernsey, then Cushing. And then the Red Oak Pipeline will pick it up from there, which was the other new pipeline announcement. And that will take volumes from Cushing to either Corpus or Houston. So let's talk first, just kind of big picture numbers. What's the CapEx spend involved here? What kind of capacities are we talking about? Things like that.
Yeah, so I guess we'll kick it off with Liberty Pipeline. The press release was a little bit short on specifics on things like route, things like where the Greenfield pipe would be laid. They did allude to some vague thing or a vague statement saying that they would use corridors, existing corridors and existing pipeline where possible. Given the CapEx number, which they guided to $1.6 billion for the project, it's East Daly's belief that that 24-inch pipeline would just be, the Greenfield piece would just be from Guernsey, the Guernsey area in Wyoming, to Cushing. Building a 24-inch pipeline all the way back to the Bakken would almost certainly cost more than that, and we're getting that information using a comparable pipeline, one that was built a few years ago, the Grand Mesa Saddlehorn JV, which was a bit of a smaller pipeline, so makes sense that it would cost a little bit less. But that was from the DJ area to Cushing, and that costed around $1.5 billion. So they did say in the press release they did expect Liberty to pull some Bakken volumes. It's our belief that those volumes will come from their JV partners' existing pipelines, which would be, as you mentioned, Butte and Belle Fourche. There is some capacity still available on those pipelines. And it's not clear. They may be able to expand those pipelines either via pump stations or looping potentially to bring more Bakken volumes down. But Liberty as a whole, they originally quoted it as 350,000 barrels a day. We've heard things up to 400,000 barrels a day. Certainly possible that they could get to 400 or even maybe a little bit more with a 24-inch pipeline.
Yeah, it makes sense. What about the Red Oak piece?
Yeah, so Red Oak, interesting pipeline that they're really did some creative things in being able to source supply from several different areas and give delivery optionality too. So they are able to utilize a lease on Sunrise, which is a pipe coming up from Midland and previously was delivering into Wichita Falls with some connecting pipelines where it could get to Cushing and some other markets. And there's likely to be underutilized space on that pipeline when some of the other Permian to Gulf Coast pipelines come online. So being very creative, they've built Red Oak, the first lateral or pieced out of Red Oak, a 30-inch pipeline down to Wichita Falls to be able to grab some of those Permian barrels and give those Permian shippers on Sunrise some optionality. So now they have optionality to potentially get their barrels to Cushing, but also get their barrels to the Gulf Coast via Red Oak. So they weren't able to do that previously. Some of those barrels weren't able to get to the Gulf Coast. So that's an interesting piece of the equation. And then they're building a main 30-inch line down to Sealy, at which point there would be two laterals, one going to Houston, one going to Corpus. Again, creative that they're giving optionality on being able to deliver into both of those markets. So giving your shippers that option appears to have some value as they got the project FID'd. And I would note, these projects are largely greenfield pieces, it appears. And they were able to beat out a lot of projects that were utilizing some brownfield expansions, which typically win the day when it comes to economics and it comes to the cost of their tariff that they're able to offer the shippers.
That's a good segue too. I mean, these pipes are slated to come online in Q1 2021, right? So
yep.
Do we need these pipes?
Yeah, interesting question. Red Oak's probably needed. It really depends on what your assumption is of supply growth out of the northern part of the United States, or Canada as well. So in a, let's call it a $60 crude scenario, we're a little shy of that today, but in a $60 crude scenario, you probably need a new Cushing to Gulf Coast pipe in 2021. It would be nice to have one today because you're sending a lot of Permian volumes up to Cushing, which is constraining that the seaways and the market links of the world to be able to get to the Gulf Coast. That's why you see a wide spread between Cushing and the Gulf Coast today. That supply pressure on Cushing should abate when those Permian to Gulf Coast pipelines come online at the end of 2019. But with any assumption of really, let's call it, if you were to assume anywhere from 400 to 500,000 barrels a day of supply growth out of the places like the Bakken, the DJ, the Powder River, potentially some more barrels getting squeezed out of Canada, you would likely need a new pipeline from Cushing South by 2021 when that comes around. Liberty's an interesting one where our crude hub model shows you don't really need a new pipe out of the Guernsey DJ area by 2021. So that's an interesting one where we see the potential where that could be an overbuild. Now, that's somewhat dependent on how many barrels that feed into Liberty come from the Bakken. So that would be helpful to the Guernsey and DJ market if there's significant incremental barrels coming down from the DJ on Butte and Bellefouche that could fill a lot of that Liberty capacity. But if we're looking at just Liberty capacity at, let's call it 350 to 400, just out of the Guernsey DJ market, that's clearly an overbuild. So that you will need to rely on a lot of Bakken volumes or a decent amount of Bakken volumes coming down on Butte and Bellefouche to fill Liberty.
That makes sense. And so the other piece of that equation coming out of Guernsey specifically is Pony, right? So my understanding is Liberty would pose some recontracting risk or rate risk, at least on Pony. Can you explain that competitive dynamic a bit?
Yeah. So again, this is highly dependent on what your assumptions are of supply, extra supply coming out of the Bakken down Butte and Bellefouche. But if we add that much capacity, that 350 to 400,000 barrel a day number from Guernsey and the DJ, you are significantly overbuilt out of those areas. So Pony has contracts rolling off at the end of 2019 and into 2020. Those barrels could potentially be stolen by Liberty if they're able to offer a lower rate than Pony is. So in a scenario where Liberty's offering a lower rate and Pony's not willing to go lower, those barrels could shift over, not just from Pony, but we should talk about White Cliffs potentially in the future losing some barrels. Saddlehorn and Grand Mesa potentially losing some barrels when their contracts fall off. So that's something to think about. And it's going to be very important to look at the amount of supply and be able to accurately forecast the amount of supply that's going to be in that Guernsey and DJ area as we head into 2021, because that will have large implications of what recontracting rates look like on pipes like Pony and what volume we assume looks like on Pony. So we ran a downside case in a snapshot we wrote yesterday, just for illustrative purposes. Again, it's hard to pin numbers on this until we know how much is going to come down from the Bakken. But if Pony were to lose 100,000 barrels a day and have to recontract at a $2.50 rate, which is about what we back Liberty's rate at, back into Liberty's rate at, there's significant downside for Pony. So Pony goes from, in our old model, where no new pipes were built no new capacity was built out of Guernsey or the DJ, where we assumed Pony would be moving about 400,000 barrels a day. If we take that down to 300,000 barrels a day at a lower rate, it's a big piece of their revenue. It's a big shift down. Again, that's a downside case. That's for illustrative purposes. And there's still a lot to play out to see how much supply is coming from where.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, if I'm a producer, right, in the Bakken, and I have a contract on Pony, and I think if I have a really good rate on Pony, a good long-term, well-negotiated rate, this could mean that I might even have more leverage over Pony, right? I can maybe even get a lower rate based on this risk. But like you said, it's still a lot of pieces to play out.
Yeah, certainly if you have a joint tariff rate with Pony and some of the connecting pipelines out of the Bakken, I'm sure a lot of this is played out with the FID process of Liberty, where these two were competing with each other for those contracts. So I'm sure a lot of that has played out, and there was an iterative process going back and forth on rates. But it does appear like Liberty has enough commitments at this point to FID the project. So it doesn't mean to say that Pony is in dire straits. There is a ramp in the risk on Pony as we head into 2021, certainly. And they've been working on recontracting for some time on that pipeline as well. And it's very possible that they've locked in a significant amount of their capacity that's scheduled to be recontracted at the end of 19 already.
Yeah, and kind of keeping with that rate and tariff theme, do you think that there could be a good enough joint tariff on Liberty to Red Oak to even compete with DAPL to EDCOP, for example?
Yeah, so it's interesting. If you pull existing rates on Butte and Bellefouche, and then we back into rates on Red Oak and Liberty, based on those numbers, and there's several assumptions that are going into those, we get to a $7 to $8 tariff down to the Gulf Coast on the Butte Bellefouche plus Liberty plus Red Oak. That is, again, there's assumptions involved there. So would Bellefouche and Butte be willing to discount their rates, which are, depending on what you look at, probably close to $3 if you're talking about getting the barrel from North Dakota all the way to the Guernsey area, about $3. If they're willing to discount that, $1 or $1.50, that's very helpful. Also, that $7 to $8 assumption assumes only 500,000 barrels a day of capacity on Red Oak. If Red Oak's able to ramp that project up to 1 million barrels a day, which they could do with a 30-inch pipeline, you have a lot more scale there. And they're able to offer, instead of maybe a 225 rate down to the Gulf Coast from Cushing, maybe a $1.50 rate. And the economics still work on that project at 900,000 barrels a day. So if under those circumstances where Butte and Bellefouche are willing to discount their rates, their existing rates, which typically happen with joint tariffs, a Liberty rate at around 250, and then a Red Oak rate with the scale that they have at 900,000 barrels a day, potentially, they could offer as low as $1.50. So you're looking at tariff rates that are very competitive with DAPL, probably on par with the best rate DAPL offers, which is for their highest committed volumes. I believe it's about 575 is kind of their best rate that they offer.
Okay. Lots of moving pieces, clearly. Now, I remember the last time I looked at the DJ stack, which was very recently on our crude hub model, it seemed like the DJ was still kind of constrained in 2020, 2021, kind of right before we have Liberty coming online. And we had kind of a list of projects that made sense, like you mentioned earlier, the brownfield expansions that make sense out of the Guernsey DJ area. I mean, was this a surprise to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a surprise. I can't think of a time, both on the natural gas and the crude side, where almost a purely greenfield option has won out over a brownfield project. I think a lot of that probably has to do with the scale they went after on Red Oak and the ability to offer that joint tariff rate, potentially at a very large pipeline out of Cushing, and giving the delivery optionality that they gave between two markets, both Houston and Corpus. So none of the other projects, to my knowledge, offered that type of optionality for delivery. And they're hitting a lot of supply basins too. So you have the advantage of hitting more than just the supply basin out of Guernsey or out of the DJ, which were some of those projects. You're also able to hit the Bakken and the Permian with that lease that they have on Sunrise. So that's probably what won the day, the scale on Red Oak, the ability for Butte, or potential ability for Butte and Bellefouche to discount their rates to get on that project and be a part of an equity owner on that Liberty project. That's probably what pushed them to win the FID over potentially some brownfield options.
Yeah, and what about, I know on that list of potential brownfield opportunities was the proposed Tallgrass KMI JV, right, to convert WIC to crude.
Yep.
If the DJ is even slightly, or DJ slash Guernsey, I'm lumping them together here, even slightly constrained before Liberty comes online. Do you think there's still opportunity for one of those other brownfield expansions, either expansion on Saddlehorn or this WIC conversion to go through?
I mean, never say never in the midstream space to the potential for an overbuilt situation. Okay. But it just looks pretty unlikely, in our opinion, at this point, that you would need a any additional expansion capacity out of the Guernsey DJ area with the 350 to 400,000 barrels a day of Liberty and Red Oak coming online. Some of that's dependent on crude oil prices. Certainly, if we were to go north of $60 to $65 to $70 crude, you'd get more production out of some of those areas. Some of it's dependent on how much is going to come down from the Bakken. So if Butte and Bellefiche completely do a loop on one of their lines and it brings down 300,000 barrels a day of crude, well, you're looking pretty a lot more tight in the Guernsey and DJ area at that point. So if you got a decent amount of supply growth out of that area, you could potentially need a new project at that point too. So maybe a small expansion on Pony. I don't think you need the scale, the type of scaled expansion that Pony and Kinder JV pitched, which is combined with the heavy line that they've proposed, which is Legacy Pony, and the new line, which is the WIC conversion and the Cheyenne Plains conversion, which is over 900,000 barrels a day. That would add 500,000 additional barrels a day to the stack. It's just a lot. It's hard to see that the supply at Guernsey and DJ would be able to support a project like that after Liberty's been FID'd.
Yeah. The last piece of the puzzle that I'm hoping to get your insight on is the Capline reversal project. So we know Cushing should be seeing, or at least in our crude hub model, what we're forecasting is Cushing should be getting a lot more volumes from Patoka via Flanagan South once Line 3 comes online, which takes volumes into Patoka. Those volumes need to leave Patoka, and that's why we, in our model, expand Flanagan South into Cushing to take those volumes. Without Red Oak, we do see Cushing building a little bit coming 2021 with the Line 3 expansion. How does the Capline reversal fit into this picture? Is it a quality deal? Is it still a viable option to alleviate Patoka and therefore Cushing? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the pitch of Capline initially was, hey, take some light barrels coming across from Cushing via a diamond pipeline expansion, and then dump those onto Capline to get those light barrels south. I think Red Oak eliminates the need for that project at this point. It remains to be seen how big Red Oak will be initially, but if we're talking... If we're talking anything close to a million barrels a day, you likely don't need to bring more light crude out of Cushing southbound. Red Oak should be able to fill that. The other piece of the equation on Capline is bringing heavy barrels down from Patoka. So, like you mentioned, Line 3 coming online. We'll see when it comes online. It looks like probably 2021 now. But bringing that heavy crude down into the Flanagan area, which is north of Patoka a little ways, it has a couple options. So you could do an expansion on Flanagan South, which would take the barrels over to Cushing. At that point at Cushing, you would need a solution of some sort to get the barrels out of Cushing. I don't think anybody wants to leave heavy barrels at Cushing at this point. So from Cushing, Seaway could do an expansion. Seaway 2 is built for heavy, and it could take heavy, so that's an option. And it could take about 250,000 barrels is what Enbridge says that can expand. So some of those Line 3 barrels could go that way, and some of them could go south to Patoka. So the Southern Access Extension on Enbridge, and I believe MPLX owns the other piece of that pipeline, could take it south to Patoka, and then you could move those barrels on a Capline reversal. So looking at the Line 3 barrels, if you get a significant portion of Line 3 barrels that wanna get to that Louisiana area, you could see Capline be able to do that. But I think the story of the light plus heavy on Capline is probably largely dead, and you really need to rely on heavy barrels coming down from the Patoka area at this point. And that's dependent on how much Flanagan South and Seaway are going to take for heavy as well. There may not be that many heavy Line 3 barrels left over to go down Capline once Flanagan South and Seaway expand if they decide to go that route.
Okay, yeah, clearly lots of moving pieces here. And as you mentioned, We did have a snapshot come out yesterday, so if any of you are interested in getting our thoughts on the a little bit more granular level, adding some more dollar signs to the analysis, you're more than welcome to reach out to us at insight@eastdaily.com for access to that snapshot. Also, if the crude hub model resonated, and any if you have any questions on that, we're more than welcome to chat more about that. But Matt, thank you for putting everything into perspective and helping us flesh out all the impacts on these announcements.
Thank you.
So as always, if you have any questions on this week's episode, shoot us a message again at insight@eastdaily.com. While you're at it, please do send us your feedback, any oil and gas questions you might have. You can subscribe to our podcast on several platforms, including Google Podcasts and Spotify. We also have our podcast available on our website at eastdaily.com. We are adding new platforms every week, so watch out for more places to listen to us. Do remember that anything you hear on this podcast is not intended to be investment advice, so please do not invest based solely on what you hear on this episode. That wraps up this episode of The Medge. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.